Shut up and sit down.
Do not self-destruct.
We decided to come and rescue you.
Good job.
Before the dark times.
I'll show you the dark side.
This is where the fun begins.
Hello there. Welcome back to the Carbonite Crew Podcast. So happy to be back with all of you on this fine, well, Thursday evening for myself. I'm your host, Tyler. Welcome in. You are part of the Carbonite Crew Podcast, and I'm here to talk about the Book of Boba Fett. The Book of Boba Fett Chapter 4 is now available for streaming exclusively on the Disney Plus streaming platform. And, yeah. We are four episodes in, and I enjoyed this episode. I'll just start with that. I enjoyed this episode. I know I've been a little bit critical of the past three, especially episodes 1 and 3. I was really critical of, but this episode, you know, it really, really felt solid. It felt like we're heading in a really good direction. Finally, with the show, I kind of feel like we know where we're going, where we're headed, you know, what we're setting up for, and all of that. So I really, really enjoyed it overall. This episode, it starts out, we see Boba in the Bacta tank straight off. And you know, when we see that, we're going to a flashback scene, which I'm happy about. As you know, if you've been listening, I have really enjoyed the flashback scenes. Not so much in the first episode, just because I was so confused, I felt like, but I really enjoyed them. And it felt like last episode, they kind of killed that off very abruptly. That's how it felt, and that's what I thought was happening. Thankfully, that's not what's happened, and we get to go back to those a little bit. We see Boba Fett, you know, he's on his own. He's riding the Bantha through the sand dunes of Tatooine in this giant desert, you know, living his life, and we see him scoping out Jabba's palace, or Bib Fortuna's palace, I guess, at this point now. We see him scoping that out, you know, and he wants to get in there. He wants to get his ship back. He wants to get, you know, his I believe it's the Fire Spray class cruiser. Many of you might know it as Slave One. Disney is in the process of changing that name, it seems like, since we never actually get a name for it here in this episode. What that name will be, I do not know yet, but I am sure in due time we will find out. We see Boba eating his dinner with his Bantha buddy, and, you know, his little Bantha buddy wants some snacks. He's hungry too, so he feeds him, and we see him wagging his tail. I didn't even realize Banthas had a tail, to be honest with you, but we see him wagging his tail, very, you know, just like man's best friend, right? It's like a dog, wagging his tail. We even see the Bantha a little bit later in the episode lick Boba Fett, you know, when he's saying goodbye, very canine-esque, which I love. You know, I'm a dog guy. I love dogs. So I love to see that. I thought that was cool. But while they're eating, he sees this light in the sky, and he sees a few of them. And we get that whistle. We get the famous flute whistle from the Mandalorian. Very subtle, but it's there. And I thought it was cool. And if you guys remember, that was when Fennec got shot, which we see in a minute or so. But Din, he's the one that shot those flares up in the Mandalorian to distract Fennec to capture her. We later see her shot in that episode, and now we're in the Book of Boba Fett. We see him walking up to Fennec and her body, just as we saw in the post-credit scene of The Mandalorian, 2 years ago now, probably? Wow. And it's pretty much a shot for shot. I think it might be even the same shot. The sound editing over it's a little bit different. It's not as Boba Fett-y, I guess. That's the term I'm looking for. But when we first saw that post-credits, where he walked up on her, it was, you could tell it was Boba Fett, or at least it was, that was the hint, where, you know, you could hear his armor and all that, whereas now he obviously doesn't have the armor when he finds her, so it's not as clingy and clangy and Boba Fett-y. You can quote that. But he finds her, and we see him take her into town, which we know, we find out is Mos Eisley, and he takes her to the mods, right? These people that have modified themselves with droid parts or mechanical parts, and you know, he's like, I need to fix her. I need her. She's dying. Go ahead, fix her up. And I'm assuming this is the place where his cyberkinetic or cybernetic or whatever crew gets their mods done that we met in the last episode. I'm assuming this is where they go. I'm assuming they go to this Mos Eisley establishment and get all their mods done. And we see some cool stuff. The guy that actually does all the mods and saves Fennec, I did find this out after watching the show. He is the bass player, the bassist for Suicidal Tendencies, I believe it was, which was super cool. And it's actually his bass line in that whole sequence playing in the background. So I thought that was super cool. After he's done saving her and getting her all, you know, modded up, I guess if that's the correct term to use, Bubba's like, are we going to cover that up? You know, like cover back up like our skin. And he's like, I would never cover up such beauty. So clearly they take pride in, you know, in this, in these modifications, which I thought that's very cool. I really like that. We cut to Fennec waking up. You know, he says, I saved your life. They're kind of chatting, you know, around the fire, campfire. And I like how in their conversation, they both know of each other and they know who they are. You know, he goes, oh, you're the great Fennec Shan of the Mid-Rim. And she's like, okay, so you know who I am. Clearly, I'm more valuable to you alive than dead. He agrees. She says, who are you? He says, I'm Boba Fett. What, how's he say it? He goes, I'm Boba Fett. I'm going to get that down. But the look on her face, she clearly knows who he is. And which I really like. Clearly, their reputation precedes them, right? I like that. As bounty hunters, they are aware of each other. I'm assuming they respect each other. And in this scene, they kind of, he talks about, you know, the Tusken Raiders, and he refers to them actually as sand people, which, you know, most people that, you know, I guess fear the Tusken Raiders, that's how they would call them. They would call them sand people, as we saw with Luke in the original trilogy. And I think Fennec kind of, you know, one-ups him and shows her hand and says, yeah, and says Tuskens in her next sentence. And I think that shows, like, you know, she respects, she is aware of the Tusken Raiders as a tribe and as people. And, you know, they're not just sand people to her, right? Like, she is very much aware of who they are, how they operate. She respects them enough, maybe their ability to get by and to live. And I like that we kind of see, it's very nuanced, obviously, but I like that we see that. I think that's a really cool nod and a really cool detail. He says he wants to go get a ship from the palace and he wants her help. So we see them go and she sends in this little drone, which is really cool. Really, really tiny. Obviously somewhat intelligent. It goes into the palace and it starts scanning. And I like that when it comes back to them, it like reveals basically in the order that it's scanned, right? Like it maps it out. I think that's really, really cool. I hope we see more technology like that used in the show and in Star Wars going forward. Like I don't know. I just thought that was a really cool like piece of technology. I would imagine that would be something a lot of people would use, especially when you're trying to break in or spy or do anything, which every Star Wars show or movie that's part of the plot, right? We gotta spy, break in, get in, figure our plan out. That's part of it. So I thought that was real cool. They go to break in, and I like how Star Wars over the last few years is really throwing in like real world details, like things that are a part of the universe or just life that is ignored in movies or shows, just in general, right? Like, people have to eat. so there's got to be a kitchen. So we end up in the palace's kitchen. Like, that's where we end up. And I like that we get small details like that, because like for me, personally, I've always had this thought, like, during action movies specifically, like, I'll sit there, you know, Mission Impossible, anything like that. When do they go to the bathroom? Like, you're going to have to go to the bathroom at some point. You know, it takes a second, but, like, it happens. Or, like, you got to eat. But, like, these action movies and movies just go on about, like, just go and pretend that that doesn't exist or doesn't happen, right? Where, even in Star Wars or Marvel or anything like that, they just never touch on that stuff. And I like how, in this episode, we end up in the kitchen and the droids are chopping up food and lettuce and all of that, you see. And I like it, just like, yeah, we're making dinner because everybody here has to eat. Like, I don't know. I think that detail's really, really cool. I like the way the chef droid, I don't know what his name is, just chopping up a bunch of stuff. Seems super efficient. He's got like 6 cleavers he's just chopping lettuce up with. But they break in. Fennec and Boba break in. They take out the first droid, and then the chef droid, right, with the 6 arms and the cleavers, just takes out Arm one by one. Very General Grievous-esque from episode 3. Absolutely love it. And then just starts spinning his arms. What a nod. I absolutely love it. Would have been better if he said General Fett. General Fett. Like, that would have been freaking awesome. So cool. But we see them. They get by that guy. Doesn't take much. Fennec basically just beheads him. And that is the end of that. But they finally get to the hangar where the ship is at. And, you know, the guards get alerted. They start firing. Boba goes into the ship. You know, you've seen this episode. I don't need to break down every single detail. But, you know, they get into the ship. They start taking off. Fennec does her awesome thing. She's a badass. Like, she's a badass. That's just, it is what it is. We've seen it time and time again. If you watch The Bad Batch, you know how much of a badass she is, especially when she goes toe-to-toe with Cad Bane, who I am hoping we see at some point, either in this series or in The Mandalorian or something. I hope we see him, because he is awesome. And I'm so glad that people realize how awesome he is. I loved him in The Clone Wars. So the fact that he got his time to shine in The Bad Batch is even better. But we're not talking about The Bad Batch. We're talking about Book of Boba Fett here today. They get in the ship. They get away. She comes up and she says, you know, what's next? You know, I'm going to stay with you. And I do just want to point this out. She gets into the cockpit with Boba. And she like buckles up, right? Like she buckles up. Can we talk about how, like, bounty hunter assassins still buckle up? Because that's awesome. When there are so many people in the world that don't buckle their seatbelt. I'm a big proponent for buckling your seatbelt, because you never know, right? It's called safety. Safety first. And she is a master assassin in a flying ship, and she still buckles up. So buckle up out there, folks. Click it or ticket. Do they still use that click it or ticket? I don't even know. They should. Very catchy. Rhymes. I love rhymes. I love me some rhymes. So he says, you know, I got some stuff I got to take care of. And yeah, yes, he does. First thing he does is go after the biker gang that took out his tribe of Tusken Raiders and just blasts them to hell. Like, and it's visually amazing. It's so cool. It's something out of a video game, really. Like, if you had a ship in a video game and there were people, like, you know, on their speeder bikes or Tusken Raiders, right? Like, in Battlefront, this is what you would be doing. This is a GTA, Star Wars GTA. This is what you'd be doing. You'd be flying your ship around and just blasting them to hell. And it looks so visually cool. He even uses the missiles, and it's pretty awesome. But after he's done with them, he heads back to the Sarlacc pit, because he says, my armor's in there. He says his armor is in there, right? So they do this cool. I like how he like tips the ship down into the, you know, into the mouth. Yeah, the mouth of the Sarlacc. And I just, this whole scene is setting up for the jump scare, right? You know, with the music kind of like quieting down and just like the visuals of the light slowly panning. And I knew it was coming the way it was set up. I've seen enough horror movies. I've seen enough just TV and movies in general. I know how the setup happens. And I'm preparing myself and I'm waiting. And it still gets me. It still gets me. Oh, man. The mouth of the Sarlacc, you know, tries to come up on to Slave One there and grab it. And I just want to say, the strength and power of the Sarlacc pit is really put on display here in this scene. It basically, you know, wraps its tentacles around the ship and it's like pulling it down, and he can't get away. Boba can't, you know, get away from it. And I thought that was really, really cool of how powerful the Sarlacc actually is. Like, I really liked seeing that. But I do want to, one question I kind of had was, and I'm assuming maybe we'll get this answered in the future, but Boba's there because he thinks his armor is in the Sarlacc, right? I'm just curious. He knows he used his suit to get out of the Sarlacc, right? But why would he think his suit is in the Sarlacc? It's kind of, I don't know. I was a little confused, right? Maybe he just doesn't remember. Like, maybe I don't know why he doesn't know that. I mean, clearly he didn't know the Jawas took it because he was unconscious. I get that. But why did he think it's in the Sarlacc pit? Because he used his suit to get out of the Sarlacc pit. So I thought that was a little weird. And another thing I thought was weird was when they show up at the Sarlacc pit, him and Fennec, actually, Boba does make the comment, this is where I went all those years ago. Okay. I like that because it puts kind of a timeline on things of where we're at. Since Return of the Jedi, it's clearly been years. I don't know. The Mandalorian, I think, is what, 5 or 6 years after that whole thing? So this is probably, you know, Boba Fett's probably 7 or 8. But, like, I'm assuming that comment was made to show how long he was with the tribe, with the Tusken Raiders. But which is nice to figure that out, because it makes more sense to have that bond that he had with them, how emotionally attached he was to them. But at the same time, how long was he alone? Because after that gang took out the Tuskens, like, was he alone for a few months, a few days? Was it a few years? Like, was he with the Tuskens for 3 years and alone for 2 years? Like, what's that timeline like? That's what I'm interested in. So I'm curious if they'll touch on how long he was actually alone, or maybe he was alone for like 3 days and that's when all of this started. I have no idea. But hopefully we'll find out. I don't know. The ship is getting entangled with the Sarlacc pit. You know, they're trying to shoot their way out. Finally, Fennec makes her way up. I have no idea how she knows where this button is, but presses the button and down drops the seismic charge that we see from Attack of the Clones. Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, the famous seismic charge drops into the mouth of the Sarlacc. He eats it up, and you hear the famous boom. I don't even know, right? The delay. And we get that finally, as Boba Fett said to his father after that in episode 2, "Got him, Dad." And yes, I finally was able to work that quote into an episode so naturally. It was this moment. Thank you, Book of Boba Fett Chapter 4, for letting me work that in naturally and letting me quote that live here on the podcast. But we got to see that again. It kills the Sarlacc. Finally, the Sarlacc is dead. Finally! He will hurt no one any longer. But then we see Boba, he clearly didn't find his armor. This man ropes his way down into the Sarlacc. Wouldn't there still be like acid and stuff that would get him? Right? I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but like, maybe he just didn't go down far enough to hit the acid. But like, even though the Sarlacc is dead, I feel like the acid would still be there. So I don't know. Either way, he roped himself down in there because he's crazy. armor's not down there, and finally he realizes this. And yeah, we do that. He tells Fennec he's putting together, planning to build, you know, what they called a house. You know, basically what, his own empire, really, is what they mean there. He's building his house. He offers her loyalty, a cut into the business. And, you know, she clearly agrees, because here we are. We cut to him getting out of the Bacta tank, and he is fully healed. We are said he's fully healed. His scars are gone. Everything's gone. Not the internal scars. Those take a little longer, as he did say in this episode. And then we cut back to the club, the bar, the cantina, what you want to call it. And we see Chrysantin. He's watching this group of Trandoshans drinking his mead, his wine, his alcohol, Kool-Aid. Well, I don't know what he's drinking. He just looks pissed. He looks pissed. He's growling. He's watching them gamble, do their Trandoshan thing. Finally gets up. He's got these badass brass knuckles that like have electricity in them, right? Which we do find out they're called knuckle dusters, which is a really freaking cool term, knuckle dusters. And just starts going to town on these guys, beating them up, punching them left and right. And he grabs the final one, you know, grabs him up in the air. And the establishment owner, which I am so sorry, I am blanking hard on her name. I cannot remember her name for the life of me. She starts talking to Chrysantin and says, hey, why don't we, you've clearly made your point. You beat them all up. Let's not have this get any messier than it already has. Let's just put this down. We'll forget. If you put him down and forget about this, I'll clear all your debts that you have in your name. You've clearly run up a big tab here. And listen, you know, it was years ago, people were screaming and chanting your name for moments like this, for this kind of display of power. So we're getting kind of like this description of this gladiator-esque, you know, operation that was being ran, I assume, here on Tatooine. You know, think Hawk in Thor 2-3, right? And Ragnarok, where, you know, people are cheering for Hawk. He's this gladiator. I hope we touch more on that, because that sounds cool, whatever that is they're referring to. She calls him Santo. And I thought that's a really cool nickname for him, since his name is so fucking hard to pronounce. I have no idea how to pronounce his name. I think that's actually a really cool, you know, nickname. We can call him Santo. And Boba's there watching this whole thing happen, by the way. Finally, we see him calm down a little bit and just rip the arm right out of the socket of this Trandoshan, which finally, after years and years and years of waiting, we see a Wookiee rip someone's arm out of their socket, just like Han said they could. We finally got to see, what was that? Episode 4, the original Star Wars that was referenced in, and we finally get to see it 44 years later, is it? Right? 40, I don't even know. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. We see Boba approach Chrysantin. He says, I got a job for you if you want to work. Love the visuals there. Love the way Santo, I'm going to call him Santo, turns his head and, like, you know, kind of has that look into the camera. Absolutely love that. Then we cut to them, and it's all the families, right, at dinner with Boba Fett. All the, like, ruling families of Tatooine. We got Trandoshans. It's literally the only species I can think of. There's a Jeeper Creeper-looking dude. He is there. And Boba's, like, basically just trying to get them to agree to help him take out the Pikes. You know, they don't see what's in it for them, these families, which I totally actually completely agree with them. You know, the Pikes are really only in Boba's territory. These other guys have nothing to gain except, you know, bloodshed from their tribes or species or families or houses. So, yeah, they have nothing to gain. But I do have one thing on this scene that piqued my curiosity, let's say. So at the beginning of, even in the trailers, but at the beginning of the show, of the series, Boba says, I intend to rule with respect, not fear. Like, you know, he's not going to be like Jabba or anything, or Bib or anything like that before him. But when the one head of the family asks Boba, what's stopping us from killing you and taking over and ruling like this area? The Rancor like puts his claw up and scares them. Is that not like him putting fear into them? Right? He just used that scare tactic to put fear into them, literally trying to convince them with fear. The complete opposite of what he said he was going to do. And maybe you could take it, he intends to rule the people with respect and not fear. Maybe these guys are a little different because they are head of households and families and ruling parties of their territories. So maybe there's some leeway and some gray area there. Maybe. But I don't know. I just wanted to call that out and throw that out there. We see the families all leave at the end, and Boba basically struck a deal with them that said, you don't have to help me. I'll take care of it myself. I'll get rid of the Pikes myself. But if they come to you and ask you to betray me, you just have to play neutral. And they all agree, which I think is pretty fair. And Boba says, we're going to get ready for war. Says to Fennec, we're getting ready for war. We are about to go to war, you know, with the Pikes. And she asks, you know, how much cash do we have? How many credits do we have? What's the reserve? And he's like, don't worry about that. I got credits. I just need more like muscle. And she says, oh, well, with enough credits, you can buy muscle. And then we hear it clear as day right there for our ear holes to devour and digest, just like the Sarlacc. We get the flute, the whistle of the Mandalorian theme, loud and clear. Mando is coming in the next episode, and I am so excited. We had an inkling that he might show up. I think he might have been in one of the trailers very quickly. But I thought it might be a small role, but by the setup of the end of this episode, it seems like it's going to be a pretty big role, or, you know, an Avengers style, right? We're going to have an Avengers style battle here at the end. It's just a bunch of awesome people like fighting the Trandoshan, or sorry, the Pikes. That's the kind of vibe I'm getting, right? You got Krisantan, who is, you know what, the Hulk of the group. You've got Fennec, who's an awesome shot and a badass. She's a Black Widow. You've got Boba Fett, who, you know, he's the OG. Let's call him like Captain America. He's the old guy here. He's kind of calling the shots. And then you got the new, like, shiny armor, like real badass dude. That's the Iron Man, right? I don't know if we're going to get anybody else, but yeah, we basically have the Avengers of Tatooine right here about to assemble. And maybe we'll get the awesome shot of the camera coming down and circling all of them, just like in the original in 2012's Marvel's The Avengers. I think that would be super freaking cool. End of the episode. As you can tell probably by my excitement with this episode, I actually really, really did enjoy it. Probably the best episode thus far in the series, I think. Probably this one, then episode 2, then episode 1, then episode 3. That would probably be the order in which I would place these. And finally, like I said at the beginning of this episode, I feel like we're finally headed in a direction. I know what's going to happen. I know where we're headed. I know what the outcome will most likely be, or, you know, like where we're headed towards the finale. And I don't know, it gives me some peace of mind. It's a little bit of relief that we kind of have that. As far as my rating goes, you know, I know I've been kind of stiff with these ratings. I've been kind of harsh. I would give this a solid 8.5. I'll go there. I'll probably stick with 8. I'm really waiting for something to wow me, but I think the elements in this episode are really, really good. There's a lot of nuances, a lot of nods, a lot of explanation for things. I thought the flashbacks were really good. I thought the main story was really good. I really, really thought it was just really good overall. Like, I was really impressed with this episode. I hope the series can stay like this, stay strong, finish stronger, I should say. And, you know, I'll be happy. It's not been my favorite series thus far. I joked to a friend a few days ago. I was like, yeah, I actually like the Falcon and Winter Soldier a lot better. And I wasn't the hugest fan of the Falcon and Winter Soldier, but I thought this episode itself was really good. I hope it stays like this. Hope we can continue this. And we'll see. Chapter 5 next week. And I will say that I'm hoping we get a Kenobi trailer at the end, or some kind of something at the end of the series or the season. Trailer would be awesome for Kenobi, but until then, I just need to throw that in there. Chapter 5 next week. I actually don't know how long this series is supposed to be. I'm going to Google that right now, because I am genuinely... How long. But here we go. Here we go. We have a release schedule right here in front of my face. No, because this... Oh, here we go. This is supposed to be 7 episodes. So we have the first 4. We have 3 left. It will drop for the next 3 weeks on Wednesday, like scheduled. So, yeah. Next week, Chapter 5. Go ahead. Check it out. And then stop back here for my review of the Chapter 5. Hopefully, it's as good or better than this episode. Thank you for listening, if you've stuck with me this whole episode, or if you've been listening to all the episodes in this review series. Thank you so much. Go ahead, make sure you follow the Carbonite Crew on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of those fun social media platforms. And you're more than welcome to reach out to us at carbonitecrew@gmail.com. And yeah, until next week, I will talk to you guys later. I will see you then. Have a great week, and may the Force be with you.
Another happy landing.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.